to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast, everyone. My name is Jace, your host. And of course, this is another Aftershock Monday podcast. For those not familiar, Aftershock is a relatively newer publisher, really kind of focusing on creator-owned work. And some of the names of the creators that have books there, you know, it's really kind of an all-star cast. You know, creators like Garth Ennis, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor. And another one of those creators that's right up there in my book is Tim Seeley. Some of you may be familiar with that name. And he's on the show today to talk about his series from Aftershock that has issue 3 coming out this Wednesday, January 17th. And that is Brilliant Trash. So welcome to the show, Tim. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So I wonder for our listeners, could you give them kind of a rundown on some of your past work that they may be familiar with?
Oh, man. Well, I've been doing this for 16 years. So I started out as a artist, I guess. Basically, I did G.I. Joe, worked at Devil's Due, drew a lot of the Dungeons and Dragons stuff. And then I started writing professionally right around that time with Hack Slash. And I've done, oh, man, so much stuff. Just such things as Loaded Bible and Deadpool versus Thanos and Grayson and Nightwing and Green Lanterns and all kinds of stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. And so if I'm looking for Tim Seeley work, which titles specifically can I go out there and currently pick up? I know you're on Green Lanterns, which has been a real fun ride, and obviously Brilliant Trash. What else do you have on the stands these days?
I'm also doing Hellblazer at DC, and we're doing a new Hack Slash series, actually, that I'm kind of just acting as a like a poo bug on and kind of overseeing with Teeny Howard and the artist Seelor.
Oh, wow. That's great. I love Teeny's, yeah, I know her. She's great. And also some exciting news over on the TV side of things, right? Revival is in development for series. Is that correct?
Well, we're making a movie, actually, and we're doing it independently, you know, kind of using the same approach we've done with comics.
Cool. That's got to be exciting. I love that story. It's in a way very poignant, I think. And so I think it would translate well. So why you chose Aftershock for the current story you're telling in Brilliant Trash, as opposed to, I mean, like you said, you've been doing this for a long time, a lot of relationships. What made you choose Aftershock for this story?
I'm basically Mike Martz, because I've known, I mean, when Mike first started working at Aftershock, I think, you know, I was on the initial email he sent out, maybe the first one he sent out. He said, you know, ask some of his old buddies, hey, do you guys want to do something for this new company I'm working at? And I kind of owe Mike big. He started me on the Batman stuff. He hired me for Batman Eternal, which was my first DC writing work. So I kind of felt like, you know, if Mike is in, I'm in. So I pitched him a couple things, and Brilliant Trash was the one that he really liked.
That's kind of funny. Yeah, if Mike was in, you were in. I kind of feel the same way. And Mike's been on the show to talk about Aftershock before, and it was kind of the same thing. I told him when I first heard about Aftershock, I was, you know, not really sure, you know, marketplace kind of crowded for publishers, you know, had my doubts. And then I heard Mike Martz was leaving Marvel to go over there and be the editor-in-chief. And I was like, well, it's going to be good then if Mike's involved. You know, so much respect for the guy. I really knew at that point this is someone I'm a publisher I'm going to have to pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and Mike's philosophy about things is always matches mine. And he's, without a doubt, one of the nicest guys in comics. Just talking to Mike, he's always got this big goofy grin on his face that you can't help but be enthusiastic about.
Yeah, agree 100%. So, well, let's get into the book itself. Brilliant Trash. Before we talk about what it's all about, I know originally it got announced with a certain artist, and then due to some circumstances beyond their control, they had to leave the title. And then when, so it kind of got delayed. And then when it was kind of re-announced, you changed the name. I think originally it was going to be called Lifespanners, and then you decided to change it to Trash. What was kind of the impetus behind that name change?
Well, I mean, basically we learned a lot of stuff about the way books are solicited. And, you know, the artist that was supposed to originally draw the book, you know, got as far as we knew, in good faith, had finished basically the entire first issue and then just disappeared on us and kind of left us in a lurch where we had already solicited, we had already done a lot of promotion work, and we found out, you know, that if you resolicit at a later date with the same title and the same everything, you get stuck with all the, you know, all that sort of bad will and the orders that you originally had when you couldn't promote stuff or share art. So we kind of had no choice but to redo it. We had to get a new artist. So, it, you know, I kind of felt like, well, this was our chance to really dig deep into it and figure out maybe what it was about and what, cause, and also like artistically, I think it changed a lot when Priscilla came on. The original artist style was more sort of a, you know, like a Jeff Darrow kind of detailed kind of thing. And Priscilla brings this kind of like, her stuff is kind of slick and sexy and fashionable. And just seeing her draw stuff changed a lot of things in the story for me. So we kind of just gave it an overhaul. And we kind of felt like, you know, maybe this was a place to sort of dig into the cyberpunk aspects of it and make it a little bit slicker, a little bit sexier, and hence the new title, Brilliant Trash.
Yeah, we should say the artist that we're just talking about, or that Tim's talking about, is Priscilla Petretti's. Is that how you say the last name?
Yep.
And yep. Colors on the book are by Marco Lasco and letters by Marshall Dillon. So I find it interesting what you just said about how Priscilla's style, you know, maybe a little more stylized, you know, love the rendering. She has really good line work, but that it kind of changed the story for you a little bit. Because as you said, you started out as an artist yourself. So now being more on the writing side of things and seeing the way, you know, she was viewing the characters and the world, that actually affected the story and the writing for you and the way you wanted to kind of go panel to panel and have the story play out. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, and then partially, you know, the way I had done the story with the original artist was that we decided we would do it Marvel style because he at the time kind of felt like he could, you know, that he could contribute to the storytelling. And so it kind of, I think it felt like it had a different story even then, you know, and that's comics is collaboration. So when you see something told differently, it kind of changes the way the story gels in your brain, you know? And because I'm working on the story with my brother, it's a concept that he and I came up with together over beers. You know, I kind of felt like if we're going to have we're shuffling the way we're collaborating, then the story gels for me in a different way. It feels different. It says different things, you know?
Wow. That's really interesting. So here we are talking about, you know, the nuts and bolts. Let's tell our listeners what the story is all about. What's your, you know, quick pitch if somebody comes up to you, I guess we call it an elevator pitch, or if somebody comes up to you at a show and says, hey, what's Brilliant Trash all about?
Let's see. Well, the kind of quick pitch is it's a cyberpunk superhero story. And the concept is, you know, in the immediate future, in a world where people don't, you know, sort of trust the media and they don't trust the government and they don't know what's real anymore, this reporter gets a story that basically, you know, is this med tech conspiracy to give people superpowers that they can sort of choose the level of which they use the superpowers. And the more powerful you are, the faster it kills you. And she's trying to investigate this thing against the backdrop of this world that one of these superhumans called Lady Last Word blew up the city of Jerusalem with her power. So it's all kind of this conspiracy, med tech, cyberpunk superhero story.
Yeah. And it, you know, this seems to be a real theme in some of my favorite books that are coming out these days. I always say I love comics that make you think, right? I feel like you get so much more value when, you know, you're done with, you know, the 10 or 15 minutes it takes you to read it, but you're still thinking about it later in the day, right? And so certainly you've grasped and incorporated a lot of the comics a lot of the concepts, I should say, of what's going on in the world today with politics, with, you know, the fake news and the social media and, you know, unrest here and distrust of government and distrust of, you know, big business and, you know, what do you believe and all that kind of stuff. You said you came up with the concept with your brother, and I'm sure the incorporation of a lot of these concepts is clearly purposeful. How long ago was it that you came up with the concept, And has any of it kind of changed with the changing of culture and political kind of atmosphere in the country these days?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the first initial idea that we had talked about is probably years ago. My brother and I kind of, you know, I mean, we live in the same town and we are interested in the same stuff. So we sit around sometimes and just talk ideas. And this was one that I think we kind of had a rough idea of. And then it was one night, maybe like 3 years ago, where we sort of added this idea of a journalist being part of the story. Because at the time, and this is, you know, pre-election and pre-campaign even, but you know, one of the things that we sort of noted was that people didn't seem to trust that if a story this big came out, that there would be certain people who wouldn't even believe it, right, or would believe something else about it. So that kind of, I think that gave us Kennedy, that gave us our main character, our entry point into the world. Because I think one of the things we recognized very early was this is a setup for a world, right? Like, so this is sort of, you know, this is the thing that sets off a whole universe of characters and people who make decisions about, you know, superpowers. But we felt like you had to have this entry point to set off that world.
Yeah. And so it must have been when, you know, Trump got involved with the election and all the fake news and everything. It must have been kind of almost like a light bulb moment for you and your brother where you went, oh, this is like the perfect setting, right?
Yeah. And you know, just the, you know, whenever there's a tendency for conservatives to really to side on the side of business over the workers, and especially in this scenario, that's helped us build this even more. You know, the emergence of the way tech companies like, you know, the Silicon Valley people do business, and Jeff Bezos and all these kind of characters sort of informed that, you know, in the end, profit is so much more important to them than any sort of social good or any of that sort of thing to them. This is all done to make the buck, the most bucks, to please the shareholders. And that also, you know, informed how this would work. I think, you know, we talked about, like, what if it's the military that's using this stuff? And we thought, you know what, the military wouldn't do that. It would be some private company who would want to grab down on these rights and to want to sell it because that, and sell it to the military, sure, but also sell it to Russia, also sell it to someone else. Because again, the bottom line is the only thing important for these people.
Right, right. And we'll talk a little bit more in depth about the story and some of the beats itself. I don't like to get too into it and dissect it all down usually when I have someone on, because I want the listeners to be intrigued and go out there and you know, discover it and you know, hear the story and, you know, for themselves the first time. I think it's so much more exciting. But a couple of things I do want to talk about before we swing back to the political side of things is, so you mentioned this reporter, Kennedy, who kind of finds herself, you know, I saw in the first issue where first introduced her, she seems to be, she comes across as a little flippant, a little more just, you know, self-involved and just kind of wants to fritter along, even though she has what at one time was considered a very respectable job of, you know, a journalist, but she's making comments about just wanting to get her listicles out, you know, her articles that are just clickbait. Basically so she can make money and just, you know, keep, you know, living the sort of privileged life that she's, you know, become accustomed to. But I think right away with what happens in the story, we see that there is so much more to her underneath. There is substance there. Whereas when we first meet her, she seems to be, you know, a lot more shallow. So I appreciated in just three issues already growth from that character.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea for me with all these stories, you know, you kind of have to have, I think people relate most to a hero that goes through a change, you know, that sort of Joseph Campbell story, that hero's journey where they resist the call, you know, and I wanted to do that kind of story with her. And part of it is, you know, she lives in the world we all do, where she's kind of given up to some degree on having ideals because she's worked in a business for, you know, 10 years and realizes it's all bullshit, you know, I mean, and journalists, so many journalists I know kind of live in that where they got into this to change the world and to make the world a better place. And at a certain point just went, yeah, but BuzzFeed will pay me this much to do, you know, all the things you missed in the background of this episode of Riverdale or whatever.
Right.
Just fluff crap. And I think part of the thing that happened to journalism and why it was so easily turned into the bad guy for this percentage of the population that you know was raging against the elites is that journalism did a shit job for about 10 years there of just giving us whatever we wanted, you know, not giving us what we needed.
Right.
And you know, they were burying, you know, stories that were important under things about Kim Kardashian, which, you know, like, yes, that's what the people want and that's how you make your bucks, but you have a duty when you're a journalist. And I think Kennedy is that. She's perfectly incorporates or encapsulates that sort of transition for journalists.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's a great way to put it. You know, they gave us what we wanted, you know, what would generate clicks on the internet rather than, you know, probably what we should have been paying attention to.
Right, and that's our fault too, you know, but it's
right,
also
exactly.
To some degree, like the reason we don't trust them is they gave us no reason to trust them.
Right. Kind of a downfall of, I mean, it's, you know, you can even talk about society and culture as kind of its own living, breathing organism. And you would hope that, you know, humans are basically good and we're all up kind of pull in the same direction and make the world a better place. But when you start looking at the trees in that forest, you know, people want to be happy. People want to have money that, you know, there's some degree of selfishness that we all have. You know, we all want to survive and, you know, have a roof over our head and things like that. So I think it's all that dichotomy of sacrifice and, you know, being out for looking out for yourself while at the same time, you know, trying to be a responsible part of society. I think as humans, as a culture, probably always something that's kind of in a way diametrically opposed to each other.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you said it right there. You know, it's the, why have a society if you're not going to rise above the things that are just basic survival and comfort? And I think, you know, that's pretty deep to get into for this comic maybe, but
right.
I think that's always part of telling, I think, any science fiction story.
But I think it actually segues really well into the next character I want to talk about a little bit, which is Jim. Three issues in, he's one of these individuals that has these powers. It's clear from the start whenever he uses these powers, he's so conscious of the fact that he has used up some of his juice, so to speak, as he puts it. You know, he's shortened his lifespan. And yet he seems to be willing to do it. He seems to be clearly placing what he sees as the greater good above his own needs, his own, you know, lifespan, which I'm sure is where the, you know, original title Lifespanners came in. And clearly, you know much more than I. Three issues in, I'm still not sure that I totally trust Jim, or maybe it's more accurate to say that the people that Jim is working for. You know, you mentioned when you were describing the story, conspiracy. So I really feel like the third issue is when the story kind of really kind of caught gear for me. You know, the transmission really like, oh, we're in high gear now. We're ready to go. You know, I read issue 3, the preview copy that Aftershock sent me. And then after I did that, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go back and reread issues 1 and 2 just to kind of refresh my memory before I got a chance to speak with you. And I went back and I was like, oh yeah, now I'm getting so much more out of the first 2 issues. So listeners, I encourage you, if you haven't checked out Brilliant Trash yet, this is the perfect time. Go and pick up the first 3 issues. Read them all in one sitting and you're going to just be blown away. But getting back to Jim, maybe I'll just ask you straight out, can we trust him, or is he set up just like Avis to kind of have a kind of a growth chain as well?
Well, I mean, I think so. What Jim sort of ends up representing the story is just this idea that of why we do things and how we see ourselves when we do, you know, whatever we're assigned to do. And I think, you know, Jim, he's the nice guy, and I think he thinks he's doing good, but I think we haven't really talked about in the story yet, and I think we get to it later, is why he thinks he's doing good. You know, I mean, what he knows that he has a high cost to using these powers, but he also, you know, comes, for him, it's like he never had opportunities like this. So he's sure he's burning off life, but he never would have gone that high. You know, I mean, he would have, he kind of describes himself having grown up in a rough place, and now he's got these opportunities. He can fly, he can be a god. And so I think he always struggles with, you know, how much life he's burning off now that he has this perfect, awesome life, but also with, you know, is he doing the right thing using this? So that kind of ends up being a major story progress for Jim. And I think, you know, we definitely set him up to be, he's our Superman to some degree, but what kind of guy is a Superman in the world that we've created for him?
Yeah, and it's fine to be Superman and have those ideals and have those motives, but at the end of the day, you know, Jim's human. So just because he thinks he's doing the right thing doesn't mean he necessarily is. So I guess it all gets back to like motivation and what information do you have that informs the decisions that you make? I mean, if you have these powers and you think you're doing good, but it turns out everything you were told and the reason behind it are all lies, it could totally flip. I imagine if something like that, he would be the first one to man up to it and try to fix it.
Yeah, we'll see in issue 4. I think that's kind of when you, the culmination of his arc, you know, I mean, he's doing a job right now in keeping Kennedy safe, but who is he keeping her safe for? And I think that's something we kind of get into issues 4 and 5.
Cool. Yeah, it's such a great story so far. I can't wait for issue 4. Let's swing back to the political side of things and just talk about politics in comics in general. I know there's a group out there who seem to always kind of rail against having politics in comics. And they say, you know, comics are supposed to be escapism. So much kind of negativity in the press with politics and such these days, watching the news, that when I read a comic, I want to escape from all that. I don't want to have it kind of thrown in my face. And you know, everyone is free to change a channel or, you know, turn the station or not go see a movie or not pick up a particular comic if it's not their cup of tea. I would never, you know, force someone to read something or watch something. You know, it's all, you know, freedom of choice. But to some of those people, I want to say, well, in a way, politics have always been in comics from, you know, the beginning of time, because politics, a lot of what politics is just relationships, right? And human interaction. But also getting a little deeper and kind of going along with what you're trying to do in this story, I think is, I think we as a society and as a culture, a lot can be said about a particular era or time period by looking at the fiction from that time period. And so I think it's a responsibility of writers who are creating, you know, fiction to have that fiction informed by what's going on in the world around them and by their own lives and their own experiences. And I think it's a disservice when the work just doesn't turn out as good when artists kind of shy away from that and try to write in a bubble. What are your thoughts on politics and comics?
I got a lot of thoughts on it, but I think my main, you know, for me, the science fiction, the genre is defined by, you know, it's stories which take a concern of a modern day and they extrapolate on them and how they would affect humanity and society in the future. You know, which is the first science fiction story is Frankenstein, which is obviously about man playing God and how that would affect the future. And so, to me, you know, if you're extrapolating upon issues that are relevant and concurrent, then by definition, science fiction is always political. So that part to me just seems, you know, ridiculous that people, you know, take politics out of this. Well, I think what they actually mean is don't make me care about people I don't care about. I think that's what they're actually saying, or don't try to make me care about people I don't care about. And so, you know, that I totally disagree with that, obviously. But I think it's just by the way people define things and how they, you know, if you want to read something totally escapist and that there's tons of Conan comics out there or whatever, that is just largely about a guy, you know, in a fantasy world being a dude, like that are pretty apolitical in most cases. So,
right.
You know, I think that is what fantasy tends to be for, but like science fiction is always political. And I think superheroes to some degree are always going to, like a superhero story, specifically a superhero story, has to be about characters who give up something and use their power to help other people. And so I think what I get backlashed on when I have superheroes help people that those people don't care about, you know, like it's, and I've seen it across the board. Like if you do a story about a superhero helping refugees, you get people angry that you're saying, well, this is, you know, political. And that's so stupid because of course superheroes would help refugees. They're by definition people fleeing something terrible and trying to survive and going to another place. That is by definition, you know, someone who a superhero would help. So it's, you know, it's just people, I think they're the ones enforcing their politics, and their politics are, I don't care about these people. And, you know, that I disagree with. So.
Yeah. I, you know, when you're talking about that, I immediately think of the recent Mr. Oz story in Action Comics, and people were given Dan Jurgens a bad time because Superman was helping some undocumented workers, and it got like mainstream press coverage. And you know, I talked to Dan about it, and I was like, you know, Dan, the problem is this shouldn't even be a thing. Of course, Superman's going to save people from a burning building. It doesn't matter who the people are.
Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous.
Which is a part of the DNA from the character from the absolute beginning, even because Superman is the symbol of an undocumented immigrant. So, you can have your beliefs about how that should be handled by the law and all these sort of things, but this idea that people think, you know, that superheroes are somehow political for helping people, it says more about the people who are angry about it than it does about the characters or the writers, for sure.
I agree. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the reason you wanted to tell this story, because it is so wrapped up in politics and the kind of the current state of affairs. Was it because you wanted to make a statement, or was it because you just thought it was a really cool idea that you and your brother came up with? Was it a mixture of both?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's always, I kind of got to hit two or three, you know, reasons to do something. But I think for this one, you know, I was interested in the immediate future and the impact of technology. I had a conversation with a guy on an airplane right before we started this story who worked in med tech, who told me that the industry moves so quickly and it's become so basically like immoral that it's cheaper to steal someone's technology, like a small company who worked specifically in these knee joints, these high-tech knee joints for replacements. And he told me that he had worked for this small company, and a larger company just came in, straight up stole their stuff, even though they had copyrighted it and everything like that. They just stole it, and it was cheaper for them to turn around and pay a lawsuit than it was for them to you know, wait, because the technology would be obsolete in a few months. So I thought that kind of was a perfect symbol for so many things, and that was kind of the entry point for me. And, you know, getting to do something kind of cyberpunky, which is always a genre I have loved. And then, you know, getting to set up a world. Like, I think for me, that's always a huge, you know, payoff for telling stories when you've created a world that you can now tell other stories in. So, you know, I try to do that with Revival, and I definitely try to do that here.
Let's talk a little bit about the storytelling style. I know when you were working on Grayson with Tom King, Tom's always someone who loves to experiment with like what's possible in comics. You know, you guys did the,
yeah.
The
backwards end. Issue and
yeah, the Future's End. Yeah. The sideways issue, which was awesome. You did the Future's End where you could read it, you know, back to front or front to back, all kinds of cool stuff. And I noticed right away in Brilliant Trash, you're experimenting with starting the narrative by giving us like screenshots of social media. So I wonder, are you going to continue to kind of experiment with the storytelling? Are you always conscious and trying to find new ways to kind of connect to readers through you know, using different things like that?
I mean, I think Tom is that guy, you know, and I worked with him. I worked with him really closely, and that's one of his passions is playing around with form. He's a formalist, you know, in the same way that Alan Moore was. And I'm not that guy really. I would be amazed when he would want to take on a backwards and forward issue. And I think it's great, but I think I tend to be more concerned about people being able to read stuff and getting it. Right. And I remember, you know, when we were working on the back and forth, the backwards issue, he asked me, should I do this? You know, I mean, cause it was kind of a risk. And I said, you should absolutely do it cause it's great, but be aware that some people will totally not get it. Right. And you know, that was true. Like some reviews were so negative cause they didn't understand it at all. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Tom is that guy and he can't stop himself from doing that. So I think that's amazing. But I tend to use it sparingly. I mean, I think, you know, starting off a story like Brilliant Trash with social media is important because it's a story about that kind of world, you know, where there's just this noise of opinions and hot takes and all this sort of listicles and shit. And I think it was important to sort of set up the world that way. But I think in general, I tend to be really reserved about that sort of thing, and maybe to a fault if I'm critiquing myself. And I kind of want to mess around with it maybe in the future, but I tend to not be that guy. So you get those first two pages and the first two issues, and we'll do some of it later. But that's me being about as experimental as I'm usually comfortable with.
Well, fair enough. I really like the way that it kind of set the tone for the story. You know, we right away, you kind of knew what this world was. You know, it was social media gone even, you know, further than we have it in our own, you know, modern world. But the other thing I love about doing things like that is there's so much information that you can glean when there's, you know, little things in the background. And I can tell that you, every headline and every little, you know, I guess kidder, I think is the Twitter analog there. Every kidder response, it had information. It helped set the tone and set the mood and give, you know, people's reactions and things like that. So I love it when there's little things like that. I think in the recent Doomsday Clock series from DC, Jeff Johns, they've done some back matter with like newspaper headlines and articles and stuff that have helped inform people.
Yeah, homage to the original Watchmen story.
Yeah,
which did that, you know, as back matter. And, you know, and part of it too is one of my favorite sort of cyberpunk stories of all time is RoboCop, the first movie, which has this, like it opens on commercials and news reports, which I think, you know, establishes immediately what kind of, you know, sort of post-consumer corporate dystopian hell that movie takes place in. Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's perfect for doing that. And I kind of wanted to say like, okay, what would be the, you know, the modern version of the news report with Lisa Hart, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I wonder how the reception's been so far with the first couple issues already on the stands for Brilliant Trash. Have you been hearing a lot of good things? People seem to get it.
I think, I mean, from the people who read it and are interested in that kind of stuff, they do like it. It's weird. Like, I feel like it's hard with these, with Aftershock to figure out what they're so new. It's interesting to figure out what seems to hit. And I think their most recent big hits have been the horror stuff, you know, the Baby Teeth and Dark Ark and Unholy Grail. So I feel like, oh, nice one, Tim, you launched a science fiction book when Aftershock figured out how to really launch some really high selling horror books. So, and that's what I usually do with horror books. So I'm just like, you're an idiot. But, you know, I think, you know, the response has been good enough. The reviews are good. And I think the interesting thing has been TV people I know are like, oh man, this is a series, you know? So I don't know if I'm always want to sell comics first, but sometimes, you know, you have to accept that you made a weird thing. That's a TV show or a movie, you know? Right. But I hope people catch on to it. I think issues 3 and 4 kind of really set up and show you, you know, us in Overdrive. And so I think, I hope people come for the Priscilla art and stay for the story.
I'll have to circle back to you after maybe the first trade drops. Maybe we'll even have you back on to kind of see what, you know, what the reaction is there. Because I know there's that subsection of comic readers out there that are always trade waiting. But hopefully there's listeners that are tuning in that are going to go and pick it up. So let's talk a little bit about world building. You mentioned it before, one of the things you love. And I guess this is indicative of what's going on with your revival title that you're talking about. Not revival, but Hack and Slash. How, you know, you created the world, but now someone else is getting to play in there. So you have other stories you can tell besides Kennedy's in this world that are kind of swimming around in the back of your mind?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the conceits on this that I want to do is we set up this world. Issue 6 kind of says, okay, here's the reality they live in, and then to some degree, the series, you know, it's called Brilliant Trash. It's about all these various people dealing with this scenario, you know. So I have tons of ideas for characters that might inhabit it, you know, and Jim and Kennedy in this world after. So I hope I get to do it. And maybe that's a little over ambitious, you know. I love doing stuff the way Eisner did The Spirit, where The Spirit was the title and he was the main character in theory, but it was really about all the little people and their little lives. And that's kind of how I approach this one, and it's definitely how I approach Revival. So I'm hoping that sort of sticks with people.
But this particular story with Jim and Kennedy, you already have in mind the beginning, the middle, the end. It's kind of a complete arc for these characters.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, fair enough.
It's yeah, very modular, but you know, we'll see. I hope people dig it. I'm excited about the way we go with it, but I tend to sometimes have big crazy ass ideas and I freak people out, so.
I think that's a good thing. It's always, you know, specifically Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, they're the ones that always tell me, you know, as a writer, as a creator, when you stop challenging, you stop pushing yourself and you just start cashing the check, that's when you can really tell that the work suffers. So I guess at the end of the day, it all comes down to if you can connect with readers and the sales allow you to continue to tell, you know, stories in this world and maybe even some other creators will pick it up, be interested, and be like, "Hey, Tim, I have this great idea for the trash world. Let me take a spin at it."
Yes, I hope so.
For me, and you know, like we talked about the change in title. For me, like I said earlier, the issue 3 is where the story really seems to take off, and I got a little thrill when Kennedy actually uses that term. You know, she calls herself Brilliant Trash, and I'm like, yeah, that's just, it's so appropriate. So in a way, I almost feel like it's a blessing in disguise that you got to change the name and got to dig a little deeper for that. It was a cool moment. Favorite moment of the story so far is what I'll say.
Oh, well, thank you, man.
So again, I want to thank Tim for joining me. You listeners, I hope you get out there and give Brilliant Trash a try. It's worth reading. I believe that 100%. It's a lot of fun. It's if you like science fiction stories, if you like stories that make you think, as I said, this is definitely a right up your alley. So get out there, pick up the issues, check it out, reach out to Tim on social media or me on social media and let us know your thoughts. And if someone does want to reach out, Tim, what's the best way to follow you and keep track of what you're working on?
I'm on Twitter at Hack and Tim Seeley. I lament being on Twitter, but I am still there and I will be for the immediate future. And you can check out my art, which I still do occasionally, at timseeleyart.blogspot.com. And I have a sort of business website at timseeleycreative.com.
All right. Now, do you have any other upcoming projects that you want to tease, or are you kind of set with what you're doing right now, the titles that you mentioned that are currently on the stands?
Well, I mean, the big one that I would like to push is I'm doing a book through Vertigo right now called Imaginary Fiends, which is my kind of a horror psychological story about a girl and her invisible friend who worked for the FBI tracking down other evil imaginary friends. So it's pretty cool. And it's issue 2 just came out. Issue 3, I think, comes out in 2 weeks, and I'm really proud of that one, so I hope people check it out.
Yeah, you know, I talked about that series when it first got announced a few months ago on the podcast, and I think at the time, listeners, I mentioned to everybody how it kind of reminded me of that recent event and court case that happened with, I believe it was the Slender Man, the two.
Yeah, Slender Man case. It's definitely inspired by that.
Yeah, and so
that's sort of the springboard upon which we built the rest of the story.
Right, and it's like, is life just not stranger than fiction? And so, yeah, I really think if that's the kind of thing that you're into, that kind of blurring of the lines between some horrible fantasy world and reality, and what's real, and you know, questioning yourself about ghosts and goblins and monsters, I think that it's right up your alley. I actually have the first couple issues of Imaginary Fiends, but haven't had a chance to read them yet. So I'll definitely have to check them out. And next time I run into you, Tim, I'll give you my thoughts.
Yeah, please.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast, Aftershock Monday. Again, I want to thank Tim Seeley for joining me. I hope you go and check out Brilliant Trash. It's a great title. And honestly, as Tim and I said, with the experience and respectability and just eye for great material that Mike Martz has, just about any title you pick up from Aftershock, you really can't go wrong. They're putting out some really, really great stuff. So I hope you all go and check it out. Don't forget, you can go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date when new episodes come out and convention coverage and all that good stuff. And don't forget, we're going to be transitioning over to LRM online full-time here in the next week or two. It'll be all the same content. We're just going to be hosted over there. Basically, it's going to give us even more access and hopefully be able to get you some exclusive content going forward. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.